Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 25, and it's Jets Week. And I think I'm the most nervous guy in the house about the Jets, apparently, because a lot of people see the Steelers winning this game rather comfortably, Dave. The Steelers, the big question all week has been the injury report. And, you know, I think the way things have gone so far this week, it's been relatively positive. Obviously, the big issue coming in now is what's going to happen at right tackle.
Yeah, before we get to the injuries and all, though, this is going to be the final game for the 1934 throwback Bumblebee jerseys. How does that hit you?
I like the Bumblebees a lot. It makes doing our job difficult just because it's so hard to read the numbers. But I was, you know, again, I think I'm in the minority here, but I like the uniforms. Just can't see the numbers.
Yeah, and you up, you know, home games and you up in the press box, it really must be kind of tough. I know it's tough on us charting the games and trying to go through the tape and all like that with those numbers. I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of changes on the field during the regular season when they wear those things. But, you know, at first I was kind of meh on them, you know, years ago, 2012 when they came out. But they've kind of grown on me. I think, probably globally, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, I think most probably didn't like them at first, and then a section of those kind of came over to the other side. But yeah, this will be it Sunday against the Jets, and I think Art Rooney said there'll be no throwback uniforms next year, and then they'll decide how to move forward from there. And I believe teams have to, once they commit to an alternate jersey, have to do so for 5 seasons. And
right,
and personally, David, those I don't know how you feel. Those old Batman-looking uniforms of, 66, 67, something like that.
The brown ones?
No, the Batman ones, the ones that kind of had the, kind of the drop-down triangle in the front and the back, the gold, what do they call that, like a cowl or something like that. Do you remember seeing pictures of those?
No, I like the brown ones. I basically like most of, I like things that are different. So, whatever they go with, I'll probably like, but I'm not specifically remembering the one you're talking about.
Yeah, and I described it wrong. These are the 66 and 67 jerseys. They were labeled the Batman uniforms as they featured a diamond-shaped gold shoulder yoke that made it look like the players were wearing capes.
Gotcha.
I know a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with those, and personally, that would be my next choice. But it sounds like we have a lot of time to worry about that.
Okay. So we got the Bumblebees against the Jets coming up. Obviously, a 1 o'clock kickoff for that one. And if you missed our podcast on Wednesday, check out what Manish Mehta had to say. And he'll be joining me today. If you happen to hear this early, he'll be with me today when I'm at Carson City doing my show at 5:30. If you want to get some more Steelers Jets talk, as we'll have plenty of it here. So, Dave, the right tackle situation. I was out at practice yesterday. I don't get out there often enough, but I got a couple stories for you, some insights for you. No Ryan Harris, no Marcus Gilbert. Gilbert's not going to play. I can't tell you Harris for sure isn't going to play, but obviously he didn't go. So it looks like Chris Hubbard is going to be the guy. Ramon Foster is going to be the guy at left guard. There's no doubt about that. And the rest of the line will be the same. Level of concern is obviously, you got to be concerned about what's going on at right tackle. But the Steelers, offensively, they're going to come into this now with DHB being healthy. They're going to come into it relatively healthy. It's just the two guys who are hurt play the same position.
Well, if relatively healthy means this long list, then
on the offensive side of
it. Okay, yeah. I mean, as a whole, I mean, this team is banged up. But Cody Wallace isn't going to play. Eli Rogers is not going to play. As you said, Marcus Gilbert's probably not going to play. It doesn't – obviously, Cinquez Golson isn't going to play. It doesn't sound like Justin Gilbert is going to play, but at least it doesn't sound like that knee injury that he suffered this week in practice is serious.
I saw him on the sideline. He was walking around. He had a sleeve on his knee, but the way he went down, from what I was told, and when you hear somebody carted off, I generally assume if somebody's carted off, they're done for the year. It's an ACL or an MCL, and that obviously was good news.
Yeah. Anthony Chiclow practiced fully again. Ramon Foster practiced fully again. Same with Hayward Bay. Maybe they get Roosevelt Nix back, David. How did he look?
Yeah, I think they will. They will get Nix back.
So that'll be a positive. You know, probably not so much from the offense. I mean, we might see him, what, 8 to 10 snaps maybe on the offensive side of football, but let's not forget that Roosevelt Nix is a good special teams player, so a little help in that area. Robert Golden, I guess it'll be interesting to see what the injury report says about him on Friday. He was limited both Wednesday and Thursday. What's your guess on him? How is he moving around?
Golden doesn't go. Jarvis Jones does go.
You think Jarvis does go? Jarvis was limited after not practicing on Wednesday. He was limited Thursday with that ankle. So, I think you nailed it. So, what are we looking at for inactives here? Gilbert, two Gilberts, a Golson, Eli Rogers. That's four. Guess on Shazier, is he's down?
Yep, he's down for sure.
So that's five. Cody Wallace makes six. And if you're guessing Golden,
Zach or Golden. They might dress Golden, but he'll be a Sean Davis situation if he dresses. So I would guess maybe Zach doesn't dress.
All right. Well. Here's the thing. We still have really addressed Ryan Harris. Would you dress him as an emergency? As an emergency guy,
It has to be a situation where he could functionally go. If he can't functionally go, you got to make a roster move, and you cut Stevie Johnson for 2 days. And bring Filer up from the practice squad, and then you put Filer through waivers on Monday, and you just reverse the move. But he has to be functionally able to go, and I think Sean Davis didn't practice all week, but he was functionally able to go. But since he hadn't practiced all week, they wouldn't use him. I think it's a little different situation with guys who are much more experienced, like Gilbert and Harris. Obviously, they don't need to practice, but they need to be able to go. I think Sean Davis was relatively healthy on Sunday night. They didn't need him. I don't know if these guys are – I know Marcus Gilbert's not healthy, and I just – on the hematoma, I'm just guessing. So,
well, it'll be interesting. I mean, we'll have our answer Saturday afternoon because that's when – if they're going to make a move with a guy like Filer, that's when it will be. And, look, I mean, we don't think anybody's going to go to IR here. You know, I think – even though Cody Wallace has yet to practice, I believe he had to have some sort of
He had arthroscopic early in the week, and so he's minimum a couple weeks. So I'm guessing you don't see Cody Wallace until after the bye. And, he would be an IR candidate if they're desperate to make a move. I don't think they're desperate, so I don't think he goes. But he's pencil Cody Wallace in for after the bye.
So that pretty much leaves us with Stevie Johnson probably being the odd man out here if they have to do something with Filer and
As Mike tells him this week, keep working hard, good stuff, you'll get a helmet. or we're gonna cut you.
Whew. It's a tough business, isn't it? So that'll be interesting to watch. With Justin Gilbert down, you don't think they pull up a guy like Al Shabazz?
No, I think Sean Davis is healthy. You're just flipping guys, so they'll be good.
All right. So Saturday we'll watch for Matt Filer, and here's the thing. We talked about this early in the week. The fact that they didn't have to sign a guy to the practice squad with all these kind of banged up bodies is encouraging. And then of course we found out later in the week Foster was going to be good to go. and obviously Gilbert isn't, and you know, we'll have to see about Ryan Harris. If they don't promote Filer, then one would think that a guy like Ryan Harris might dress in case of double emergency, because obviously the news is out there that Marquise Pouncey got some work at tackle as an emergency type situation here. So that would maybe lead you to believe that if they're working him at tackle, that maybe they.
But he didn't work yesterday at tackle. He took 4 snaps on Wednesday. So take that for what it's worth.
All right. So that's not much right there. So we'll see. To be determined on Saturday, and that'll tell us a lot about what the inactives will look like on Sunday.
Yeah, so let me tell you a couple things that I saw just in general as, reporting from practice. What happened on with Justin Gilbert, that they weren't supposed to – that's not supposed to be reported. It has to be confirmed by someone in the locker room, and that didn't really happen. So it's like most teams.
Here's what I think would happen. I think Robert Golden said something. Who's the guy from PXI?
Bill Phillips. Robert Golden, that was not considered confirmation.
Okay.
And the Steelers issued a note saying, please be careful about what you do here. This is not, that's not what we want, how we want this to go. So anyway, so in terms of, I'll tell you a couple things in practice. Watch the Steelers. Like I said, I wish I could get over there more. I had reason to get there yesterday. So it's a beautiful afternoon. Doing a lot of drills. And, it's a little different in the preseason. One of the things they were working on early when they were doing positional stuff and skill stuff was, Joey Porter was standing on Joey Porter was kneeling on the goal line with a football, and they had all the defensive guys, all the front 7 guys line up in 2 groups, one and then the other. And so they'd line up half on one side of Joe and the other. So let's say there are 4 guys on each side, and they do it twice. And he would do a cadence and trying to draw him offside, but at the same time it was a 5-yard sprint, and Mike Tomlin was there judging who won the 5-yard sprint. So it's just working on getting off the ball as quickly as possible at the snap. And Porter's trying to draw him off and jerking him around with the snap count. And then they're sprinting 5 yards. And so, working on things like that. So, that was some of the positional stuff. What the offensive guys, some of what they were doing is they were starting at the 2 and then working their way from the 5 to the 10. And Ben was throwing routes to the receivers. And one of the interesting things, and if you go back to the 2-point conversion, this is what happened in the game against the Chiefs, is – he was not calling plays. He was hand signaling each guy. And we were sitting there trying to decipher the hand signals. But let me tell you something. Take a close look at this stuff on plays around the goal line, because Ben is not calling plays sometimes in games. He is hand signaling these guys the route. And I'm not even sure the same hand signal every time means something. I think it might be like a third base coach. He can hand signal something, and then if he claps twice, then everybody's got a different route to run. It's like the way I think about it, and this is not necessarily how it actually works, but every receiver has 2 routes from the position they're going if they haven't called a play in the huddle. And he's giving you one or the other and telling you by a hand signal which one you have. And then if he claps, then it's just, okay, run the opposite one of what I hand signaled you, so that guys can't decipher it. And it was just kind of fascinating to watch him do it. Wheaton looked good. I mean, they all looked good, but I think it was a good week for Marcus Wheaton. And then when they went live in the team drills, what I found interesting was they do 2 things. One is they do one-on-ones. They do 11-on-11s, first versus first. And that's just matchup stuff where you're trying to beat the other guys. That's not preparing necessarily for the Jets. So that was the first thing they did. And then the second thing they did was, they ran the scout team, or they call the look team. So the look team's out there, and there are 4 or 5 guys, whether it's the offense or the defense, whoever the look team is, who have orange jerseys on with numbers on. And they're the Jets guys' numbers. And so what happens is each time they want to play, one of the, staff guys, not an assistant coach, a staff guy comes out with a big card, and he holds it up in front of the look team. So they know what they're supposed to do on this play, because obviously they don't know all the Jets plays, and then Steelers don't want them spending time trying to learn the Jets plays. So they hold up a card for the guys, take 10 seconds. Everybody walks up and looks at the card to see what their assignment is on that specific play. They run the play, and then, these four guys with orange jerseys on, or they're really pinnies on, with the Jets numbers, those are the guys who are key players on the Jets that they want the offense or the defense to be aware of on every play. And it's, I think it's, you know, probably more for the defense, more for the Steelers offense to look at the Jets defense, to think about specific guys. Because obviously when the Jets have the ball, you're worried about the quarterback, the running backs, the receiver. I mean, you know, you're worried about the skill position guys. So it's less of an issue. But it was interesting on the defensive guy side that they were highlighting, you know, four or five guys.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, we, you know, talking about those signals, you know, Alex Cazora has noted a few times in the past the old tugging of the face mask by Ben and those kind of things. So, and I believe some of the young wide receivers were quoted early on, I think back in training camp, saying how you always had to keep your eyes on Ben.
Pre-snap, you better be watching.
You better be watching him because you might miss one of those keys or whatnot as well. And what do you think about all the comments, kind of the back and forth with Roethlisberger and Todd Haley, his comments on Thursday, talking about, you know, all these kind of weapons, you know, with the return of Le'Veon Bell and how, you know, it's got to be an offensive coordinator's dream right now, you know, to all the kind of things that you can draw up in the sand, so to speak, and Ben saying, "Well, you know, you want to make sure you don't get too complicated in that kind of stuff." And then I think that was brought up to Todd Haley on Thursday. And he says, and he began his answer kind of comical. He says, "Oh, Coach Ben," and then went on from there. But you know, I think there is a little bit of truth to that. I mean, obviously you have your set offense and you're changing things on a weekly basis, not so much the plays as you are formations that you're running these different plays out of. And you know what, this is one of the things that's always kind of intrigued me, and maybe one of these times when you get Todd Haley for one of your one-on-ones, David, is, you know, how many plays are actually added, you know, throughout the season? You know, in other words, I mean, to think that this team goes into a game with, you know, how many plays would you say they would go into a game with? Now that's a loose statement, because you can.
I think the playbook's probably 80 to 100 plays.
Now, obviously,
it's
you
a
can
straight
run,
guess,
and you can run those out of different formations, because I mean, you don't want to put a play on paper out of the same formation week in, week out. You know, you want to change up the formations that you kind of run these out. Now, obviously, the RPOs and stuff like that, a lot of times you'll see the same formation with that, and a lot of that's determined on what the quarterback sees and all. But, you know, it'd be interesting to really know how big the playbook is, and then what they kind of, you know, and of course Todd's not going to tell you, you know, probably exact numbers, but it'd be interesting to know how many plays they kind of whittle that down to from Sunday to Sunday, because you can't practice 100 plays during practice, you know, throughout.
No, yeah, I think probably the way I think about it is 60 to 70 of that's put in the preseason. You get kind of basically the book in by the end of the preseason, and you're adding kind of 2 to 5 plays a week, and there are things, you know, they're in the playbook, but you don't use anymore. So I think you're probably drawing up 2 to 5 things a week for specifics and putting them in.
Yeah, as far as new stuff, you think 2 to 3, 4?
Yeah.
That'd just be interesting to kind of, you know, and I spent a lot of time kind of deciphering what I want you to ask, but you get the gist of it there. And look, I mean, they have Le'Veon Bell back, and you can certainly do a lot of things with not only him, but having D'Angelo Williams on the field as well too. And I think really Ben's just general statement was, look, you know, you don't want to try to do too much and put too much, you know, on these guys, especially when you have so many guys coming in and out. Like, you have Chris Hubbard now, you know, potentially going to start at right tackle. You had B.J. Finney starting last week at left guard there. So I just wanted the crazy things that questions that enters my head.
Okay. So I guess in terms of, you know, the question is going to be, is David Johnson the guy on the right side who, you know, is helping out at right tackle? Will they use Roosevelt Nix at all as an H-back maybe to help on that side? What are the formations going to be offensively? And then defensively, it's, you know, what kind of – again, we've talked about too many times. We've talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick being a smart guy who can make all the throws but doesn't make good decisions. To me, it's a question of focus on Brandon Marshall and focus on Matt Forte. They've got really two guys who are going to do the damage in terms of being big play capable guys. And if you keep those guys in check and are able to get pressure on an average offensive line. I don't know that Nick Mangold's as good as everybody says he is. Clady's an okay left tackle. It's not a fantastic offensive line. So, you know, could dial it up the way you dialed it up against Kansas City and make sure you're getting after him.
Well, here's the thing. It looks like Brian Winters might miss this game, their right guard, due to a concussion. So, who's that going to be? Wesley Johnson, Dakota Dozier, Phil?
Wesley Johnson, everybody knows, former Steeler.
Right. But I think mostly he's kind of considered their backup center, so it might be Dozier in there. So there's one kind of – interesting sidebar to kind of look at it in this game. Overall, David, I don't think their offensive line's that bad. This is a team that's only given up 6 sacks so far this season. Now, I went through and finished up some timing of their last game against the Seahawks, and on 48 dropbacks that Ryan Fitzpatrick had, and this includes sacks and really all plays, you know, from snap to either sack or him getting the football out, he averaged 2.25 seconds, and that's including the sacks as well. So, you know, he got the football out. Now, I did notice kind of in the fourth quarter and on, you know, kind of running that hurry up stuff and those kind of things. I mean, there was a lot of 1.7 and less kind of releases that obviously kind of brought that average down. So I guess in a roundabout way, we're attacking the Jets offense here first. You got to be careful. I mean, and here's something that I wrote down as a question for you before we kind of got into this. The Steelers' first 5 games here, when you look back starting the season and knowing the quarterbacks that the Steelers were going to face in these first 5 games, how would you rank those 5 quarterbacks as far as fearing playing them?
How would I rank the first 5 they played fear of playing them?
You have Cousins, you have Dalton, you have Wentz, you have Alex Smith, and you have Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, going into each game, the way I looked at it, I would say Dalton won.
No, you had to decide this before the start of the season.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Dalton won. Fitzpatrick 2, Cousins 3, Smith 4, and Wentz 5.
Okay. That's very fair. That's fair, you know, because Dalton obviously knows a lot about you because he's played you and he's beaten you before. But yeah, I'm with you. Fitzpatrick would be I don't think many of our listeners would argue with Fitzpatrick being number 2, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you want to put Cousins 2, okay, probably wouldn't put – I mean, Alex Smith, it's more a team concept than an Alex Smith concept, so, you know, he's probably behind those guys for me. But I'm a Fitzpatrick fan. I like – look, if you're smart and you have as Jaworski says, if you're smart and you have the arm talent, you can be dangerous. Now, if you make bad decisions, good on us and bad on you. But, you know, the guys who can make all the throws. And Alex Smith isn't really a guy you think making all the throws. Kirk Cousins isn't necessarily a guy, you know, he's a good quarterback. He's an average NFL starting quarterback. Let's put it that way, which means you're an exceptional quarterback, but you're average in the league. And so, you know, I think Fitzpatrick, what he has is he's just been incredibly volatile.
Yes. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm going with this is despite the bad start that Fitzpatrick has had, he's still a good quarterback. He's still a dangerous quarterback. He can make all the throws. He's very smart. This isn't going to be his first rodeo versus the Steelers here. So, you know, this is still an offense that needs respect. And if you go back and you kind of look at all the interceptions he's had, and even Keith Butler talked about this on Thursday, And you could do this with every quarterback, obviously. Not all those interceptions were his fault. I mean, even if you look at the game against the Seahawks this past week, he had a receiver fall down on one of those. Now, has Ryan Fitzpatrick and another ball, I think, went right off of a running back's hands out of the backfield and bounced up in the air. So, obviously, not all these interceptions are on Ryan Fitzpatrick. Has he made some poor decisions? Yes, he has. But I don't think you can take these first four games of Ryan Fitzpatrick this year, put him in a box and say, oh, well, this is a quarterback that the Steelers should easily beat, because they still have a good 1-2 combination at running back in Matt Forte and Bilal Powell. Brandon Marshall, as long as Brandon Marshall's healthy, he's, what would you say, top? Where would you put Brandon Marshall in top wide receivers in the league? 10, 15?
Just right on 10. Right on 10. 10 to maybe, I know who the top five. I think everybody, I was doing this actually last week on Twitter, and then I saw a bunch of things during the week that kind of were asking the same question. The top five are Julio Jones, Nuke, AB, OBJ, and I'm trying to remember exactly who I put fifth there. I think I put Dez in as fifth. And then just behind those guys, you put in, Stephon Diggs is a young, upcoming, really good receiver.
You better put Fitz in there.
Fitz is on the backside of that group, yeah. Then, whatever you think of Jordy Nelson in terms of where he is, I feel like I'm forgetting one guy.
AJ Green?
Oh, no, AJ Green was the fifth guy in. AJ Green was clearly the fifth guy in. Then I had Dez right behind him as sixth. And then, you can go through that 6 to 10. Brandon Marshall's in that group, I think, that 6 through 10 group. But, yeah, A.J. Green was the number 5. I think the 5 best receivers, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, Antonio Brown, Nuke, and OBJ. In terms of I don't know who you can put ahead of any of those 5 guys. I think that's pretty clean, a clean group of 5.
But we would agree Brandon Marshall's, if he's not 10th, he's definitely,
yeah, he's right there.
He's right. Definitely top 15 if way some of our listeners may have him ranked out there. But regardless, he's an experienced wide receiver. He's been obviously working with Fitzpatrick for a number of years now, and those two really seem to be on the same page. Yes, it does look like they're going to be without Eric Decker this week, and that's a pretty significant blow to that offense. However, Quincy Enunwa has played extremely well. If you're going to point out a weakness right now on that offense, it'd probably be the tight end position, right? Brandon Bostwick and Kellen Davis don't exactly, strike fear in you as far as that goes. But let's not forget that Matt Forte out of the backfield is a great receiving back. They haven't used him the way you would think they might use him so far this season. And I think the best way for the Jets offense to approach this game is to A, try to run the football early, and B, being as how Fitzpatrick has had kind of, a rough start to the season here, a lot of quick, easy to decipher throws against what we're primarily going to see some zone drops by the Steelers right off the bat. So I kind of expect them to try to get him into a rhythm early, try to run the football, and as things kind of loosen up, then you probably see some back shoulder stuff on the outside to Marshall, some out stuff to Quincy Enunwa, and then of course try to beat over the top deep with a deep pass or two. Does Brandon Marshall versus Cockrell or Artie Burns worry you?
Yeah, Brandon Marshall, any good receiver against any singular cornerback worries me. Single guys are going to beat single guys. Doesn't matter if it's who the corner is, whether it's whatever. I mean, nobody's going to cover Antonio Brown one-on-one, and Steelers are going to have trouble covering Brandon Marshall one-on-one. So, but, Cockrell did an amazing job against A.J. Green. I don't know that they'll have him follow Brandon Marshall, but they might. And I will tell you, in practice yesterday, Cockrell was lining up on the right side as often as he was lining up on the left side. So maybe he is going to shadow him.
And that wouldn't hurt my feelings, I don't think.
No, I'd be fine with it too.
Kind of a similar type game plan as they used against AJ Green, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to look for. I am more concerned about the Jets offense than I am the Jets defense. Fair enough?
Huh. Well, I think you're more concerned, but I'm guessing part of that is you're more concerned about the Steelers defense than you are the Steelers offense.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand it. Like I said, I'll just go back to what I've been saying all week. The way that the Jets have to win this game, the way the Eagles won this game, they have to have their defensive front dominate the Steelers offensive line to contain the Steelers offense, and then they have a chance. If they don't, Steelers, Ben's going
to
kill
them. Would you, you know, Keith Butler wants to say, well, we didn't blitz as much as it looked like. Here's how we chart blitzes, David. If somebody other than a defensive lineman or an outside linebacker comes, we consider that a blitz, okay? Even if it
– And as I've said, that's not how what the Steelers consider a blitz five.
Right. They consider numbers. You know, I guess it's a blitz is in the eye of the beholder. So, I'm not sure I'd only send four consistently after Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's already kind of a wounded duck psychologically, probably, if you will. I want to turn up the heat. I want him to have to make those quick early reads. And if he beats me with some quick outs or getting rid of the football quick up over the top on a one-on-one matchup, I think I can live with that. I just don't want to send four and it be easily identifiable for him and him just you know, dink and dunk, you know, 1,000 paper cuts down the field.
Okay, Steeler fans, listen, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or just refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can get in touch with Craig at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471. Or you can just apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. That's easy to remember. It's company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, well, kind of we've gone through what we would expect to see on both sides of the ball for the Steelers. Let me give you a couple quick over-unders. We'll talk a little of the NFL, and we'll get to our picks.
Well, let's talk about their defense real quick, because that seems to be where you had the most concern, right? The Jets defense versus the Steelers offense?
Yeah, and my concern is that the stout front, and you look at the guys, and they list themselves, or however you want to talk about it, they list themselves as playing a 3-4. They don't really play a 3-4. It's a 4-3. Sheldon Richardson's a stand-up end. But, look, Sheldon Richardson, if you've watched the guy play in his career, you know what he is. He is an edge rusher. He's a defensive lineman. The thing is, with, you know, these three number one picks, Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, there's not a beast edge rusher amongst them. They're all really good players. But you don't think of – there's not a Von Miller, a Terrell Suggs type of guy coming off the edge with blazing speed. You know, they're all just all-around good football players. You throw Steve McClendon in there, who's been a nice fit for them, and that group up front's good. It's not – just flat-out say it. It's not good behind them. I mean, their linebackers are nondescript, although Darren Lee is going to be a good – you know, Mike Tomlin is – recap, if you watch the film, I mean, Darren Lee is a Ryan Shazier type player. They wear the same number. He can run sideline to sideline. He is that kind of guy. I don't, you know, if you listen to Manish talk about him, it sounds like maybe he hasn't been, as you would expect with a young guy, always assignment specific, getting everything right. And then you get behind those guys, and we, you know, we'll see what happens with Revis, but Revis hasn't been good and, you know, dinged up. He's not going to be better being dinged up. Calvin, you know, Buster Skrine, you know, whatever. Calvin Pryor, who was a former first-round pick too, but, I mean, their safeties don't necessarily impress me that much. So the guys behind them don't impress me.
Yeah, I think the Steelers might have problems running the football up the middle on these guys. I think the best way to hopefully kind of attack these guys is maybe with some counters with David DeCastro pulling. I think you want to try to maybe get Le'Veon Bell outside the tackles, if you will, because I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to run up the middle on the Jets successfully. I think you definitely want to look at getting Bell lined up maybe on a linebacker split out wide and all, and maybe you go empty set, but in doing so, you keep a guy like Jesse James or somebody in to help block, particularly on that right side with Chris Hubbard likely to make the start over there. When you look at their secondary, and doesn't seem like we should even care if Revis plays or not. But if he doesn't, I mean, you're going to have Buster Skrine and Marcus Williams, I think, out there on the edges. And then when they go into nickel, or sub package, they're going to probably be a mess. So one would think that if I'm their defensive coordinator, I don't want to get beat over top. So I might tend to play more cover two. I mean, you know they're going to bracket at least with one of those safeties. They're going to be bracketing AB regardless of who plays in this game. But I'd be more apt to try to only send four a lot in this game, my front four. Try to play hopefully two safeties back and disguise that as best as I can and make Ben Roethlisberger be patient and take these throws underneath. How big of a temptation is there going to be for Roethlisberger to maybe go deep too many times?
I don't know. Is there such a thing as too many?
Not for him. With the way
they've been going. We'll see what's there. If it's going deep, on three consecutive possessions and it's third down and you go out, then that's too many, right? But you need to take what the defense gives you. But again, you want to be dictating things, not just being dictated to. So I think we've seen a nice blend from the Steelers offense so far. So I'm not too concerned about anything happening too often, TOO often. But I do think you're right about the run. I think they'll have to, you want to run some play action early on these guys. You want to run some quick hitters. Some quick slants to Jesse James over the middle to kind of loosen those guys up a bit to get that going. And if you can do that, then things will start to open up.
I think something that we might be talking about on Monday is success rate maybe on second down and the down and distance or the distance faced on first down. Because if you have a lot of these early runs or run game alternatives like these bubble screens that go for 1 or 2 yards and you're behind the chains and you're facing a lot of second and sevens, second and eights in this game, and you're not getting yourself in manageable third down positions, because that's where the Jets I think can really, really win here against Roethlisberger, is getting them in these third and longs, because we know Roethlisberger doesn't like throwing short of the chains on third down situations here. Obviously, that's an ideal down and distance to get after him with sending six even if you have to and make him get rid of the football quickly. So, I think second down might be a key down to look for in this game because, like I said earlier, I don't – and hopefully I'm wrong. I don't see them having a lot of success on first and 10 type runs, especially if they do these up the middle, because I think that defensive line's stout enough to kind of shut that down.
All right. So, we'll see. We're what do we got? We're exactly almost to the minute, 48 hours away from kickoff. Around the league, a bunch more guys going on the IR this week. Tough to see Navarro Bowman out for the year. Tyler Eifert suffers another injury to his back. He's not going to play this week. That's bad news for the Bengals in terms of big injuries around the league. What else do we have, Dave? Kevin White, his NFL career is off to a disastrous start. He goes on IR with a broken fibula. Kid from West Virginia, I think he was taken 7th overall 2 years ago by the Bears. Really just hasn't had much of a career at all. Missed all of last year.
Max Williams went on IR today for the Ravens as well.
I hadn't seen that. What was his issue?
Maybe it was a back. I'm trying to remember. I got it pulled up right here. He'll have surgery. It was a knee injury that he had, aggravated a knee injury in the week 4 loss to the Raiders. And Harbaugh said it's the same thing he's had. It's a cartilage issue that he has in there. It's not something that can be fixed until it's fixed. So Max Williams on IR for the Ravens.
Oh yeah, and that sounds like that's a you're done for the year injury if he's having surgery, you would assume. Last week was Manti Te'o. I feel like we're forgetting one guy, another guy for this week. Verrett for San Diego. He and Manti, yeah, San Diego. Wow, what was the stat? There was some crazy stat. The team's leading by 14 or more points with 5 minutes to go since, you know, maybe since 2000 or maybe 2010. Had lost 13 times. Three of them were the Chargers and two of them were this year. I mean, brutal losses twice this year. I don't know if Mike McCoy's on a hot seat, but he is certainly hot. He was some kind of hot after that game this week. You look at the – well, I don't know how closely you watched the game last night, Dave. The celebration penalty, I think now the uproar over the celebration penalties is now enough that I think the NFL is going to have to rethink this. I mean, I think for a while, fans, media, they were like, yeah, these guys are being, you know, clowns. There's too much of this stuff. But I think it's reversed the other way. And that call against Carlos Hyde last night was just ridiculous. I mean, he gives the, you know, the bodybuilder pose. And they got a, you know, after he got a first down, you know, San Francisco's trying to move the ball. They're closer to midfield. They move them all the way back. They give them the first down, but they, you know, start back at their own 25 and nothing gets going. Do you have any thought on that?
It kind of goes along with these celebration penalties as well, too. I mean, it's in the eye of the beholder a lot of times. I guess it depends on what officiating crew you get, what old man wants you to get off his lawn, you know. There's not uniformity. You know, in my opinion, I mean, when you look at AB, you know, sexually suggestive, you know, I don't know. I mean, we've already beat that dead horse quite a bit. But when you have a guy like Manny Sanders only do a two-pump twerk and he doesn't get flagged, and then you have AB, I think Tomlin hit the point that the higher profile guys are just that, higher profiles. You know, we all know what's happened with Odell Beckham Jr. and the things that he's really seems to be I don't want to say a target, but he's they're definitely kind of watching him right now for anything that he does. But you know, it's different.
Did you see the ridiculously stupid thing that Ray Fittipaldi tweeted out? Not that Ray was being stupid, but he tweeted out that Antonio said he thought toning it down to two pumps would be okay.
Well,
first of all, I thought he did three anyway. But I can't decide if it's comically stupid or comically funny this is what we're talking about. And I decided it's both.
Well, what do you think about Tomlin's response about not really being overly worried about it outside of wanting to get confirmation from the league on what's allowed and what's not allowed? And Dean Blandino did that later that evening and then says, you know, that's something that the competition committee has a hand in, evidently. And Mike Tomlin's part of the competition committee.
Yeah, that was a little dig by Dean Blandino at Mike Tomlin for sure.
I thought so too.
And what's Tomlin supposed to say? He's in a bad spot. I don't have any problem with his response. I mean, you know, what does the fans want to say? He's going to go in and scream at the players. He's scream at them until they stop. I mean, look, they know that this can damage the team, and it hasn't impacted anything yet. So I guess the answer is until it does, it just is what it is. I mean, I certainly understand anybody's frustration with it. Like I said, I don't know whether it's comically funny or comically stupid. It's both. There's just not much more to say about it. I do think the NFL has gone over the top.
I think the fan base is kind of split right down the middle. Half of them want them to be Barry Sanders and just toss the ball to the ref, and the others, you know, are kind of like just let them dance and trying to point out the hypocrisy of the league that will cut to a cheerleader, you know, right after showing a guy twerk, you know, that's not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that argument's a little bit silly, the cheerleaders on the sideline. I mean, you got cheerleaders on the sideline in high school football games. I mean, come on. It's not a cheerleaders issue, okay? So it's not a Cialis and Viagra issue. It's, okay, they're just being – the restrictions are too tight on what guys are allowed to do.
Do you think about, like, the throat gestures or the shooting the bow and arrow?
Yeah, nobody – that's fine. Yeah, I've banned that. I mean, nobody's doing that anymore, so I think that's right. You know, nobody wants kind of violent acts. Nobody wants to see lewd acts either. I don't know, you know, was Antonio's stuff lewd? I don't know what the line, where to draw the line. The first one was probably a bit aggressive. And he knows it. He's just he's begging for the attention. So, you know,
I thought his Benny Wiggle or whatever that was more sexually suggestive. that original dance that he did for some time. Well, Brandon Marshall's come out on record and said if he scores this week against the Steelers, he's going to twerk. And
the other thing I said is, listen, if you're dancing and it's not a little bit sexually suggestive, you're not a very good dancer. So, you know,
let me ask you: is Victor Cruz, is the salsa a dance?
I love the salsa.
Is the salsa considered? Can it be considered sexually suggestive?
It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be hot and sexy. I mean, dancing is a lot. That's what a lot of dancing is supposed to be. It's just so dumb.
I said in one of my posts, I wrote that we should just mark this up to Antonio being a bad dancer, because didn't we already know that? thanks to Dancing with the Stars this year.
Well, that's what I can't remember who said that on my show, or Charlie said it on the post game a bunch of times. He's like, dude, you were on Dancing with the Stars. Give me something better than that. I mean, you know, come on. Show me something.
Yeah, so
you're going to dance.
Yeah, we spent probably way too much time on that. But like you said, until it happens again and it really costs, then that's when, you know, this is going to come back to the forefront again. Just spike the football or something. I don't know. I mean, I told you in a previous show,
give me Billy White Cheese Johnson all day, every day.
And that could kind of be considered...
Oh, that would absolutely be flagged today. Absolutely be flagged.
You know, I mean, now we know what Elvis went through, right? Here's something. Just don't show the players from the waist up.
All right, let's move on. Okay, anything else around the league? That was a big game for the Cards to win last night, blah, blah, blah.
It just goes to show you that, I mean, that was an ugly game to watch, especially that first half. Goes to show you how you can't turn the football over. I mean, you just can't turn the football over.
But Colin Kaepernick's going to get his chance. He's going to be the starter next week.
I don't think it'll matter, but...
That hasn't been announced, but I'm telling you that's the answer. All right. Well, let's get to our picks for the week. And let's knock that out. Let me pull up. Let me get my lines going here.
While you look that up, what should we be most concerned about this week's game with the Steelers? If the offense doesn't score 25 points, or if the defense allows 25 points?
Be more concerned about the offense not scoring 25.
Okay,
I'm looking for Marcus Wheaton to have a game in this one. I'm looking for a little comeback week for Marcus Wheaton.
I'm looking for Sammy Coates to have 100 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game. That's
wow. Do you know Sammy Coates does not have a career touchdown?
You are correct, sir. And
Everybody got one last week, but Sam.
I think it's going to set up some opportunities for Sammy to catch a couple of those deep balls and. I think it'll be there for him to score at least once, but I'll go on record as predicting 100 yards and 2 touchdowns for Sammy Coates this week.
All right. I'll take the under.
with my money, I suppose.
Yeah, with your money, right. Vikings -7 against the Texans. I love the Vikings. I love them. And I've been on this bandwagon now. 7's not a comfortable number for me, though. I think the Vikings win, but I would probably take – I'm not going to play this, but I would take the 7 points.
Boy, that defense is good. And if you looked at NEA stats that I put out every week, they're going to be around, and they're going to compete for – they're going to be probably in the playoffs for the sheer fact of that defense. I mean, that defense is that good. And I don't think this line is big enough – they're going to get after Brock Osweiler this week. So I'm with you on this one. Give me Minnesota plus the points. And last night's
and B, you can't have Minnesota and the
sorry,
points.
I'm sorry, laying the points. I'm looking at what happened last night, and I wanted to point out that I had San Francisco plus the 3.5 last night, and you had Arizona laying the points last night. But give me Minnesota laying the points.
Game number 2 is Miami hosting Tennessee. Tennessee getting 3.5. By QBR, Marcus Mariota is the lowest-rated quarterback in the NFL at this point in the season. I guess I kind of like Miami in this one. I mean, I still have a scar in my brain from watching them play the Bengals. So logic would tell you to take the points here, so let me take the Dolphins and lay the points.
Ryan Tannehill, they just don't – that offense just does not seem to be in sync. And, you know, as bad as maybe Tennessee's played – this year, I just think they're the better team top to bottom. So I'm going to take Tennessee and lay the points.
Okay, the whole world will be on the Patriots this week on a three-team tease, teasing them down from 10.5. So let me fade the world. Browns have been in their games. They're not getting smoked. They're fine. They're getting jobbed by the refs once or twice. Twice to be the Duke Johnson fumble, the Kellen Winslow, the Terrell Pryor, whoever it was, the unsportsmanlike conduct call, which was a joke a few weeks ago. They're getting 10.5. They've historically played the Patriots pretty tough. I'll take a flyer on the Browns.
Boy, Tom Brady's first game back, and Julian Edelman, I think, showed up on the injury report this week as well, too. But with that said, you got to think Tom's going to come out and want to make a statement here, big time. And you know, I know Cody Kessler has played, you know, admirable so far. I just don't see how they get in this game, though. I think Bill Belichick just totally confuses that kid. New England, you know, all the way in this one and lay the points.
Okay, let's go to the Skins +4 at Baltimore. I'll take the Skins with the points here. I think they're a better team. Justin Forsett, no longer a member of the Ravens.
Oh, wow. I can't go against Baltimore here. Just plain and simple. I just think I'm not ready. Washington's just too up and down right now.
Eagles -3 at Detroit. Give me the Lions plus the points at home.
Boy, can Carson Wentz come out of the bye and still be that same guy? I think he can. I think Philadelphia wins this and wins this going away.
All right, Bears +4.5 on the road at Indy. Boy, these teams are both bad. But I got to think, the Colts made some changes here, released Antonio Cromartie, and they released Sio, the linebacker from UConn. Both starters, they released, waived one, released the other. Two starters from their defense this week trying to make changes. Let's see what happens. I'll take the Colts -4.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. Boy, Chicago, just all the injuries they've had this year. Boy, Indy, you know, go with the quarterback in this one. And so with that, I'll take Andrew Luck. And give me
– I think Hoyer's getting the start, isn't he?
Yeah, probably.
Denver -4.5 at the Falcons. I just saw a couple of the Falcons just – what did I see? Starting rookie linebacker Deion Jones and amongst others are out for the Falcons. They deserve all the attention they've got, but I'm now fading Matt Ryan. I'm fading him starting this week. Let's see. If he goes into Denver and does it, then God bless him. If he's not already the leader in the MVP conversation, he's going to be the leader. I'll take the Broncos -4.5, and I don't know who's playing quarterback for the Broncos.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Boy, Matt Ryan, that offensive passing adjusted net yard stat that I keep up with is like 10. Right now, that's not going to stick. I mean, it's going to correct. Those numbers always do early on, and boy, it could correct a lot. I think this week against the Broncos. I mean, say regardless of who starts at quarterback for Denver, I think they're going to be able to keep this game close and ultimately win it. So give me Denver and lay the points. If Atlanta has a good offensive showing against this Denver defense, then it's time to start talking about them. But until then, I don't see them winning it against Denver.
This is going to surprise people, but I think maybe the most interesting matchup of the week is the 2-2 Bills on the road at the Rams, who are 3-1. Somebody's going to win this game. The Bills are either going to have won three straight and have defeated, two really good teams, or whatever you think of Arizona, but Arizona, New England, and then go on the road in L.A. and win. That would be awfully impressive to be 3-2. Or the Rams are going to win this game and be 4-1. And nobody's talking about them, and everybody's talking about Jared Goff not playing, but their defense is excellent, and this would be a big win. And all of a sudden, the NFC West, the Cardinals, be in real trouble. I don't know what to do in this game, Dave. I'll take the Rams just because they're at home and the Bills are going across the country -2. But I'm actually excited to watch some of that game, believe
it or not. I think the difference in this game is the way Buffalo is going to be able to get after the Rams offense. And, they're going to, I think, try to shut Gurley down, obviously. And I think they're just going to confuse their offense. I think – and look, that Buffalo, they can't afford to fall another full game behind in that division. I mean, let's face it right now, they're probably playing for a wild card as it is. I think Buffalo wins this one by a field goal.
Okay, Chargers go up the road and take on the Raiders in Oakland. Chargers are only getting 3.5. That doesn't seem like enough. Their season's on the line, but I don't see it. I'll take the Raiders. Did well last week beating the Ravens, helped the Steelers out. I'll take the Ravens. Raiders -3.5.
Boy, did Carr look good in that game?
Derek.
I always want to say David. You can tell, show him age, but. He looked fan. He made some money throws in that game. Crabtree's playing well. I know Oakland might have some questions at running back here with a few injuries, but top to bottom, they're just the better team right now, and I have Oakland covering this.
I'll take Dallas +1.5 at home against Cincinnati, maybe with my heart more than my head, but I'll take
it. No, I'm going to go with you as well. I'm going to go with you on this one. Just a gut feeling. Dak hasn't thrown an interception yet, right?
Crazy good.
If Ezekiel Elliott can continue running the way he did in that game last week, which I think they'll be able to do, I think they're going to be able to run on Cincinnati and keep Dak out of a lot of long third and longs. And if they do that, make this game manageable for Dak, I think Dallas can win this one. So I'm with you. Give me Dallas.
Green Bay -7 hosting the Giants. Giants' season is could be slipping by the boards here. I'll take the 7. Just they've got dominated by the Vikings, but Green Bay's defense isn't like the Vikings' defense. So I'll say that they make some corrections and put some points up. I don't know if they win, but they keep this game close. So I'll take.
Well,
you
just wonder, if you have OBJ, you probably the thoughts tempted you to bench him in your fantasy league. But as soon as you do that, he's going to go off and have 8 catches for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. I don't think this is going to be the week, though, with him. Give me Green Bay just to – I think they take it to the Giants. So I'm going to call for an easy cover here.
Tampa Bay getting 4.5. It doesn't look like Cam's going to play. Somebody else is out for – I'm trying to remember who else it is. Somebody else is out for Carolina, it looks like. I don't think Tampa's a bad team. They haven't played well, and Jameis hasn't played well lately. But give me them getting 4.5, him making a statement on national television showing what he's worth. But Derek Anderson is a Tampa Bay killer for Carolina. But I'll take the 4.5 here.
Oh, wow. Give me Jameis Winston in this one.
All right. Just one more time, Steelers fans. Mortgage rates currently at all-time lows. If you want to buy a home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, check out Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help you out. You can call him at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471. That's blackandgoldlending.com if it's easier for you to apply online. It's company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Which brings us to the game of the week, the Steelers and the Jets. And Dave, I'm 3-1 on predicting scores, and the scores, when I predict 30-20, the Steelers win. When I've gone off 30-20, when I went decisively off with 30-17, the Steelers did not win. So I think 30-20 is probably about where I see a lot of the games the Steelers play, and I'll just revert back, 30-20 Steelers.
Wow. After all that buildup of being worried about the Jets, huh?
I'm definitely worried, but I'm worried about their defense. But I do think at the end of the day, their secondary and their back seven. I think the Steelers will eventually get to them.
I think this line is just a tad too high, personally. I really do. And we talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's going to have a bounce back game, but to what degree? I don't think he's going to be as bad as he's been in these first four games. With that said, I think the Steelers will win this, but I think this is going to be one of those nail biters. I don't think Steelers hit 30 in this one. I think probably the narrative we're talking about is, man, what happened to the Steelers offense? What happened to on those second downs and not staying out of those second and longs type situations? I think this is going to be a lot closer game, and I'm going to go 24-20 Steelers over the Jets in this one.
So you're taking the points in the Jets. Okay. Good stuff. Just a couple tweets. I don't know that we've seen the final injury report, but just a note. Jeremy Fowler's tweeting, you know, Shazier's out. I mean, we knew this all along. He said no structural damage to the knee. Working to get back, just not ready yet. That's good news. I mean, a sprain, I guess that, you know, sprain's not considered, I guess, structural damage. It is structural damage. A sprain is a very mild tear. You know, positive news, and I think we expected Shazier to be at least 2 weeks. I'm guessing he might be another week. And then, you know, I think you're shooting for the Patriots game or obviously then after the bye. So that's just an update. And I think we've kind of gone through the injury stuff pretty extensively. So that's where we are.
Yeah, we'll be updating. I'll have the full injury report up.
So I apologize. Here is just out. Okay, this is out. Justin Gilbert, Marcus Gilbert, Robert Golden, Senquez Golson, Ryan Harris, Rosie Nix, Eli Rogers, Ryan Shazier, Cody Wallace. So the two guys we were Golden's no surprise to me. Ryan Harris out, so the Steelers will be making a roster move tomorrow. Rosie Nix being out is a bit of a surprise. He practiced all week, but obviously he's not ready. So that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. So the Steelers are going to be short a guy. In terms of, you know, maybe Golden stands on the sideline or something, but these guys are out.
Boy, that's going to make predicting the inactive list tough because you can only put 7 of them on there. So I think it's easy to figure out who the most injured are. You know, yeah, that's the funny thing is you have to look at this as who do you give the vested who do you officially kind of. Because if they're not inactive, they're considered dressing, right? So they get credit for a game, you know?
Yeah, you know, you're not worried about too many of these guys. I mean, I don't know.
I worry about things like that.
But it's not going to – none of these guys are young enough, really, that makes a difference, right?
No, I'm just teasing that it just makes it kind of difficult to play the game here as far as the inactives go. But, boy, that's a ton of guys, going to miss this week, and we'll watch and see what happens on Saturday. Okay, what's the narratives if the Steelers lose? Real quick.
Turnovers.
Yeah, I'm with you. Short fields for the Jets and play in the story. I think that's how the Steelers lose. Short fields, a lot. 14 putos for the Jets if the Steelers lose. All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, please go to SteelersDepot.com and hit the donate button in the upper navigational bar. And, David, let's talk about a win on Monday.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.